Well, I didn't get to go to the game, Tori, so I watched it on DVR, and it felt like I was watching a montage, you know? It's like every little clip, every time I fast-forwarded, would get a little bit better. Just like I know your favorite movie, one of the greatest movies, you claim, of Western civilization, Karate Kid.
Well, first of all, three thoughts on the intro. One, Karate Kid, I don't think is one of the best movies or one of the best movies. It's the best movie probably ever made, the original Karate Kid. And, you know, I could give you a whole diatribe on how anything you need to know to navigate anything life can throw at you can be learned from Karate Kid. So that's a given. That's one. Two, as far as the montage intro to the podcast this week, I don't get the joke and I think it's dumb. And my intro was funny. Better.
No, three, it was not.
Which was the Mean Joe Green commercial from the 1970s, where Mean Joe Green is all beaten up and sad and depressed at the end, and then he gets a Coke and it makes him feel better. And then my joke was going to be, well, geez, do you think the Mean Green could have used a Coke and a smile after that beatdown?
Yeah, that's, but you know,
superior the entrance.
No, it's not, though, because, I mean, in your mind, I think you're remembering that commercial to being better and crisper and funnier than it actually was, because I played it a few times, and I'm like, this is crap. Who paid this kid to be an actor? He can't even, like, it took him three times to say Coke. He didn't have a freaking...
You're missing the point, though. They're missing the point. Mean Joe Green, who, by the way, the Mean Green of North Texas are named after, is all, like, beaten up, down and depressed and sad, and the only thing that can make him feel better is to have that Coke.
Yeah, but it's got this weird, like, 70s sort of ABBA music playing in the background. It's not how you remember it. You should go YouTube it. So welcome to...
I'm the one that sent it to you. I saw it. I know what it looks like, and it would have been a superior intro.
Well, welcome to 12 Saturdays, episode 5. I'm James Blayle.
Forever known as the one with the bad intro. I'm Tori Brecht.
Yeah, well, you know, Karate Kid sucks, all right? I sent you that video of Daniel-san was the bad guy in Karate Kid.
Yeah.
All right. That's not true. But anyway, the one thing that is not in doubt is that North Texas is not good at football. Or Iowa's really good at football, or probably a little of both.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, certainly North Texas didn't pose much of a threat. I mean, only like 5 or 10 minutes into the first quarter when you basically knew that the game was over and the only question was what was the score going to be. And hey, they didn't let up, right? They poured it on them. That felt
good.
They
swept the leg, as one might say.
They did sweep the leg.
You're going to need a body bag. You know, I was really encouraged. Like I said, I couldn't attend, but it looked like a nice game to just kind of kick back and enjoy the crowd experience, because there was absolutely no stress or drama at all on the field. Well, let's, you know, start from the top. I mean, CJ and Canzari really just kind of stole the show. I mean, I was watching, I was streaming as much as I could. And at one point, I think CJ's passing efficiency was just a hair under 300.
Yeah, started 15 of 15. You know, really, it just goes to show you, if you have protection and you have all day to throw, a good quarterback is going to pick you apart. And, you know, certainly that was the case with Iowa there. You know, he didn't try a lot down the field except for, you know, the giant 81-yard bomb to Tavon Smith.
Yeah.
But, you know, they could have done that a few more times, I think, if they really wanted to. So, I think it was a great game to kind of get a little bit of reps for the second string, maybe not tax your starters as much as you needed to and work some things out. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I don't think it could have worked out better as far as, you know, hitting that magical undefeated in the non-con, which we haven't seen since 2009. And, you know, hopefully it's a harbinger and that we have another special season like we did the last time we went undefeated in the non-con.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's always the hope. Maybe a little bit too much to ask of this squad because they're still pretty green. But you know, but so far everything. I mean, you can't get any better than perfect. And although there, you know, it wasn't perfect. I will say that there were a couple of things that were concerning. It's hard to find fault, of course, with 62-16. But I'll try. It seemed like they did find something with that run to the. To the their left side, our right side, getting the edge, and then the linebackers were out of position. It was like 2014 all over again. They were just eating up yards. So it's almost like we were playing the percentages that North Texas would eventually screw up, and sure enough, they did every single time. So are we just, I mean, but it feels like, you can't really count on that with Wisconsin or really anybody in the Big Ten.
Well, a couple thoughts on that is one, I definitely think they were employing the bend but don't break at that point. And all North Texas got out of those two bad drives that Iowa had was 6 points. I mean, the one touchdown they got was after
Well, that
the
was a
one thing that you
gift.
really can't complain about, the ridiculous play call for Derek Mitchell's first ever play as a running back, which was unbelievable. That was their touchdown. So I think there was bend but don't break. I think it was a pretty vanilla defense. And then you have to keep in mind too that they're running out of the shotgun. And I don't think that that's the kind of running you're going to see, at least from next week's opponent, Wisconsin. They're going to try to do what Wisconsin does and maul you and run it through. So as far as big worries, not so much for me with the running game. It looked to me like, the defensive end was a little bit over pursuing, expecting that North Texas was going to need to throw to get back in the game. And they got some decent chunks running, but they also ran a lot of clock and they ultimately didn't score touchdowns. So, really it's exactly what your defense is designed to do anyway.
Yeah, no, it was fine, and I would say that, if you're going to see that at all, you're probably going to see it from maybe like Northwestern,
Definitely. Yeah,
that
and
kind of
that would
style,
be a
or
concern.
maybe
Maybe
Indiana.
Indiana.
Yeah, and then the other bit was I counted four dropped interceptions. I know we had two pick sixes, and nobody can complain about that, but there should have been six, man.
Well, that's why they're playing defense, Jim.
Yeah,
If they could catch those passes, they'd be receivers,
The one
right?
was when and I don't remember who it was. I think maybe Maben and one of the safeties just collided, and either one of them had backed off. It was an easy pick, but they
When
both
I
went.
think,
They got greedy, Tori, and
well, and
that
then
was
I
when they
think King
collided.
might have been showboating a little bit on the one he tried to snag one-handed. I think he might have had a shot at it two-handed, but he's kind of going for the Odell Beckham Jr. look on defense there. So, but you know what? It's still better than a completion. Knock
Oh
that
yeah.
thing down.
Yeah, no complaint. Well, and speaking of completions, the other thing about North Texas is that they had a lot of long passes and even a touchdown pass that really were just drops by their receivers, and I'm just, again, just nitpicking a little bit, but Wisconsin, Nebraska, and even Northwestern and Minnesota, they're not going to drop those that badly every time, not in the end zone. So
Well, Nebraska might.
well, I mean, it was great all around. I mean, we got a lot of reps, got some rest for the stars after they padded their stats, and then got the younger guys some snaps, and I think saw some encouraging talent too come out on the field. I think when Wadley holds on to the ball, he's got a lot of potential, a lot of upside still.
I was thinking about this, Jim, and I actually think what might be holding him back more than the ball security and fumbling issue is, if you notice, Kanzeri has been awesome at picking up the blitz and in blocking. And I think, Wadley might actually be, from a tailback running perspective, he might be the most talented runner on the team. But I'm thinking that it might be more of his blocking and blitz pickup that has him more concerned even than the fumbling issue, because quietly Kanzeri's had a couple pretty big fumbles too, and yet they keep running him out there. So
Well, what choice do you have at this point? I mean,
if you want to talk about things to be worried about, I am a little concerned about LaShawn Daniels and his ankle, because that first game he really looked great, had a nice burst, had some nice long runs, but in the two games he's played since then, he still looks tentative and dinged up to me. And my big worry is I don't think Kanzeri can handle being the workhorse. Now, I know in his press conference today, Ferentz, said, well, Fred Russell was smaller and he got a ton of carries, and Adam Robinson wasn't that much bigger and he got a ton of carries. But
Alan Young,
Kanzeri has
Albert Young.
Albert Young.
Yeah.
But Kanzeri has the history of injuries, so
Yeah.
that makes me nervous.
Well, and but I did see that Young or Daniels had a couple of good runs. Yeah, I think his long was like 16, 17, and he looked pretty solid. So I would say he didn't look as good as he did the first game, but he looked a hell of a lot better than he did against Pitt. So, you know, hopefully he will be, you know, if he's not 100%, hopefully he's trending close to 80-85% by Saturday. I mean, what else can you do? You know, you got Kinsbury, and then you've got Akram and Wadley after that, or Mitchell and Wadley after that. So yeah, I
I'm
mean.
still intrigued by Wadley. I mean, that I honestly, his game against Northwestern last year might have been the best running back game by a Hawkeye in the 2014 season, I think.
Well, yes, in the 2014 season, I say Kanzeri probably just topped it for going back to green. So, yeah. Well, it was great. I mean, and of course, you know, you can always say good things about Beathard. He just
He's spoiling us. I think he's kind
he
of
really
starting to,
is.
he might be starting to spoil us a little now. Of course, competition level is ramping up. And, you know, as I pointed out in my column this week, and I won't get too much into talking about the Badger game because I know we're going to have a guest, presumably, and we'll talk about that. But I really think this week might come down to a battle of which quarterback is better.
Well, I'll take ours in any fight, really, in the West right now, up against anybody. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
well, should we toast this one and move on and talk a little bit about Wisconsin? Spin the wheel.
Let's make sure it's a special toast just from the standpoint of, hey, 4-0, got out of the non-conference unscathed. I think this is what so many of us have been clamoring for from Ferentz, especially when the non-conference schedule looks to be a little bit soft.
Right. That's the key is, you know, it's like, you know, you don't get extra credit for beating up the bad guys, but you sure as hell beats coming out of it, you know, versus 3-1 or 2-2 against a soft schedule. So absolutely excited about it.
So how is the wheel holding up there,
I don't,
Jim?
you know, I had to put some WD-40 on the damn thing because it sprung a what do you want to call it? It's sprung a sprocket, but no, it's working fine. You want to give?
You haven't been letting your kids play with it, have you?
Yeah, hell yeah, they put the cat on there and spin it around. So then you got to pick through the fur and the guts and the blood, but cats are cheap. So should I? It's my turn to spin, I think. So
I think,
I'll.
is it?
Yeah, you spun like twice last two times.
Okay.
You've been a wheel hog, man.
I am a wheel
Let a
hog.
brother
I
have a
love a
turn.
wheel.
All right.
My goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin.
Oh, look at that. So we're back to ink-stained wretch.
Ink-stained wretches
I
again.
don't think they like us calling them that, do they?
I think, I don't know.
I mean, they have to have a sense of humor, what with all the wretchedness.
Well, I guess, you know, in this day and age, it's more like Twitter bites or something. I don't know. What would you call it? What's the digital equivalent of an ink-stained wretch, Jim?
Like a pixel-stained wretch that's farsighted and gets headaches whenever they look at the sun, and I don't know. What do you call it?
That works for me. This time we're going to go with the Quad Cities home field advantage and bring back a guest we had last year, and that's the ever interesting and erudite Steve Batterson of the Quad City Times, also a proud Daily Iowan alum, such as myself, and a University of Iowa graduate.
I
So
didn't know
who
that.
better to talk about Hawkeye football than a Hawkeye?
I didn't know that he was from the DI back in the day.
Well, couldn't you just tell by what a witty writer and intelligent person he was?
No, you all look the same to me. All right. Well, awesome. Welcome, Steve. Hey, Steve. Well, it feels a heck of a lot better since the last time we spoke, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, September to remember, I guess you could say. It's the type of fast start that this Iowa football team needed.
You know, you are our second newspaper reporter we've had on for this season. And, you know, we talked to Scott Dockerman, a guy you know well, earlier, and he had talked about a sense, even really early in the season, about a certain amount of swagger and maybe a little bit more focus and determination he sensed around the program. Have you sensed the same thing? I guess this is a long way of asking, is this fool's gold, or does this team have something going on this year?
I think there's been something going on with this team going all the way back to January. And I think it has a lot to do with what transpired late last season. And, you know, the seniors on this group have really have bought into to turn this thing around and not leaving on any terms other than their own. And I think that's kind of carried Iowa a long way so far. You know, we'll find out a little more here over the next few weeks, but this is a group that they've been tight. You know, nobody was happy the way last season ended. I mean, the fans obviously weren't, the coaches weren't, and nobody has more invested in it than the guys putting the uniforms on. And you know, they walked away from that game against Nebraska, and they certainly walked away from that bowl game rather disgusted with themselves. And you know, you can take two paths at that point. And this group has decided to kind of, you know, take the bull by the horns and do something about it. And, you know, Kirk made a change in the way his leadership group is structured prior, you know, this goes back to May probably. But what we saw then was him really put this team in kind of the hands of the senior class, and along with a few underclassmen that, there are so many more seniors on that leadership group right now. It's very reflective of what he saw in those guys individually, I think, and it's also very reflective of how much ownership they wanted in this team. And so far, we've seen results.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially last week, you know, setting aside and accounting for the quality of the opponent, really had everything kind of clicking together. So what was the sense coming out of that last week? Was it just kind of like, you know, go out there and take care of business, or were they just having fun with it at that point? I mean, it's been a long time since Iowa's blown somebody off the field like that of any caliber, even FCS schools. They've never beaten that badly. So, I mean, what was the sense coming out of that? Or was it all about getting ready for Wisconsin?
My question going into last week is what we would see on Saturday. And what we saw was a very workmanlike, businesslike effort. And which I think, you know, it goes back to the focus that this team has had. And I think that became pretty apparent pretty quickly that they were there to take care of business. And there really wasn't much North Texas could do about it. And which, you know, as a, you know, somebody, an onlooker, that's exactly what you would hope to see. We certainly have not seen that at times in the past. We've seen teams kind of ebb and flow with the emotions and you know, coming off of a pair of emotional games against Iowa State on the road and certainly at home against Pitt, you know, and looking ahead to a game against Wisconsin, there would have been every opportunity for a letdown, but that didn't happen. You know, I think that's kind of the DNA of this team right now. They're a group that is pretty focused on what they want to do and what they want to accomplish. And you know, North Texas has happened to be the next thing in the way before the start of Big Ten play. And, you know, post game they were pretty comfortable with where things are at. And it's a very confident football team right now. You know, their mindset has changed pretty quickly the last few days. You know, once guys started coming off the field, the starters had a chance to kind of kick back and watch the fourth quarter on Saturday, which is a very unusual situation for Iowa. Some of the guys post game mentioned that their minds started drifting a little bit towards the start of Big Ten play at that point, and that's probably when it should, because a very tough challenge right out of the gates.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been able to set the starters like that. Tori, you were thinking something like that too, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, one thing that Kirk Ferentz said in his press conference today, I got a chance to read the transcript this afternoon, that I thought was interesting and kind of a new wrinkle, maybe, I thought, was somebody had asked him kind of about the tiers of the Big Ten and what neighborhood you're in, and basically had said, you know, Wisconsin and Michigan State maybe look like they'd been pulling away when you wanted to be there. And he had the first time that I can really remember him, you know, sort of acknowledging that, you know, yeah, those are our near peers. And, you know, we need to be up there doing what they're doing to be in a championship level caliber, which has always been his goal since Fry. I thought that was a pretty eye-opening answer and maybe a little reflective of his new approach to candor. What do you think, Steve?
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, certainly, you know, the unspoken goal, you know, has always been to be in that upper tier. And, you know, and there certainly has been a little, you know, pulling ahead of the pack. You know, Wisconsin, you know, they're the team to beat in the West until somebody knocks them off the perch. And, you know, if you want to occupy that perch, you have to start by putting yourself in the position to compete on even terms with those guys. And you know, I think that's what this group has been working toward. You know, we'll find out in a few days whether or not, you know, that work is going to pay any dividends or not. But, you know, Michigan State certainly has become kind of the class of the East along with Ohio State. And you know, I think in terms of recruiting, you know, recruiting the types of, you know, turf that these schools have to recruit to, you know, if you're a Michigan State or if you're a Wisconsin or if you're an Iowa or you're in Minnesota, you know, you're not going to get necessarily a ton of your kids out of your home state. And those are kind of peer institutions that they're very similar to Iowa in terms of you've got to go out of state and you've got to kind of cherry pick what you're getting, both within your state and on the outside. And I think that's where Kirk was headed today. And certainly if Iowa wants to be in that mix to have a chance to go to Indianapolis in December, one of the best ways to get there is to put yourself on a level with the Wisconsins and the Michigan States.
So how do you, I mean, that's a good point. How do you see the West shaping up then? I mean, Wisconsin, I think preseason, it was everybody was talking about Wisconsin and Nebraska, maybe Minnesota as well. I mean, they finished fairly well last year, but it looks like maybe Minnesota is a little worse than advertised and maybe the same for Nebraska. I don't know. What's your take?
Things are a little wobbly with a lot of teams. A lot of teams have some kind of holes, some visible holes that maybe people weren't thinking about heading into the season. And some teams are a little better than what people thought.
So, I mean, like Iowa and Northwestern? Which teams are surprising on the upside and which teams are surprising on the downside?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at it, this is a very interesting weekend in a lot of ways. You know, Iowa and Northwestern have both played some pretty good football. Iowa's probably been the most complete team out of the seven in the division. You know, if you're going to take a look at, you know, there's probably only one real dumpster fire, and that's Purdue. Beyond that, it's a little rough for Darryl Hazel, and you know, he's been a little unsettled at quarterback, and, you know, I think you can probably safely put them in the seventh slot at this point, but
I think you can safely put him back in the MAC this time next year.
Well, it's a possibility too. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, you know, certainly some improvement is needed, and you know, it's not going to get any easier after the start they've had. So, you know, Iowa Northwestern are both teams that you know, they're kind of intriguing at this point. You know, Northwestern has played awfully good defense. Their offensive side of the ball has been a little inconsistent at times. Iowa probably has had the most complete package in terms of offense, defense, special teams so far. Still a lot of room for improvement, but, you know, I think they put themselves in the position that, you know, they can at least go to Wisconsin this weekend and people think they might have a chance to, you know, stay on the same field with them and compete against a team that's kind of built the same way that Iowa is. You've got, you know, strength versus strength here, and I think that's one of those things that, you know, I expect a fairly close and entertaining game, much like we saw a year ago in Iowa City. Hawkeyes will have to find a way to, you know, to kind of play the full 60 if they want to get there. And that would be a huge win for Iowa in terms of division. Minnesota has struggled offensively. That's been a constant, really, since their opener with TCU. Not sure there's any answers there. They've had some injuries up front that have kind of factored into things. When they get those guys back, they'll be a little bit better maybe than what they have been. Nebraska, I think we're seeing some issues there in terms of coaching change and just kind of the restructuring of that program. And people probably, you know, I think maybe overestimated Tommy Armstrong. I think he's a fine quarterback, but, you know, I think there's still some inconsistencies in his play, and as well as just being on the same page with what they're trying to do offensively, it's led to some issues, and it's going to be a wild, wild west. The one team I didn't mention was Illinois, but certainly
Illinois,
the West Blunt certainly has an arm, and if they do get,
he has two, Stevie has two. I've seen him on TV.
I thought that was CGI.
if they do get Mikey Dudek back to, they're going to have a pitcher and catcher there that certainly can make things interesting on any given Saturday.
So we've been in kind of a weird situation as Iowa fans this season compared to others, is that Jim and I were just talking about, we don't really have much to complain about or to worry about. So I'm going to ask you, you've watched obviously every minute of Iowa playing so far this year. What are some potential pitfalls or areas that maybe better teams than what Iowa has played so far might look to exploit? What should we start getting nervous about?
Yeah, it's about the time. I'm sure it's been a really disappointing month for a lot of folks. But
traffic is down on the blog, I'll tell you, because people like to talk about bad teams. But right now, there's nothing to complain about.
Give it time. If I've learned anything in 31 years at the Times, it's give it time. There will be, everything's cyclical. You know how that works. So both the good and the bad. But this team is still young in spots, and it's still untested in spots. And I think Iowa's offensive line depth is a little bit of a question, and I think that those inside guys are playing awfully well right now. The younger guys on the perimeter, they've been helped a little bit by some of the blocking that I was getting out of the tight end spots, which has made has made that offense go a little bit. How long can Jordan Canzeri continue to carry 20 to 25 times a game? That's a question. And certainly I think they need to develop some depth there, whether that be LeSean Daniels returning to full speed, which he certainly wasn't at last week. Or maybe the development of Derek Mitchell, that next man in philosophy that, is always out there. The depth at quarterback obviously is a major concern. CJ needs to stay healthy.
That was really apparent, I think, in the fourth quarter is the drop off. I mean, they didn't trust Tyler really to throw much at all.
I don't think there was a need to really throw too much at that point either. I think that factors into it as well. But, I think he's out there to try to gain some confidence and just to gain some reps and get a little experience. I mean, he's 2 for 2 passing. So, I mean, when was the last time Iowa had a quarterback that was, through 1,000%, it was
the answer was the first half of last week. That would be the answer to that trivia question.
A lot of the same questions that were kind of there at the beginning of the season, they're still there. And I think that's probably the case for pretty much every Big Ten team. Teams kind of go their own way in the non-conference portion of the schedule. And what we'll find out over these next couple of weeks is, who the real contenders and who the pretenders are. And I think Iowa certainly is a little better, tuned into to being closer to contender than pretender this year, maybe than they were a year ago. And I think Kirk has a real comfort level with his team. I'm one of those guys that subscribes to the theory that the reason that we were seeing things like fake field goals and, the bombed reverse last week and things like that, I think they're doing those things because he trusts the guys he has on the field. There's the comfort level. And you'll talk to some former players, and one of the things they'll say is they run this stuff all the time through practice, but it never gets used in games. Well, one of the reasons is he doesn't trust them enough to actually try it during a game. This year, he's had enough trust and faith in those guys to give things a whirl. Some of them haven't worked out, but matter of fact, most of them haven't worked out. But they certainly are giving defenses and coordinators at other schools something else to think about and worry about, because one of those days, one of those things is going to work.
Right.
And it's going to make a difference in a game. But I think it all gets back to him, not only Kirk, but the staff as well, having enough trust and faith in the players that they've got on the field this year to actually go out and actually get those things.
Yeah, and those are always fun things. I mean, that was one of the things I think most of us loved about Coach Fry so much, and I think it was a little frustrating to some of us Iowa fans knowing Ferentz, you know, coached under him and obviously admires him a lot, is that he didn't quite have that devil may care issue, but you know, now he seems to be adopting some of that.
No, Fry built that to Bielema, right?
Right, exactly. So to switch gears on you a little bit here, Steve, I have a media related question. You know, Ferentz took some sort of course or had a consultant about media relations or something. Have you noticed a change in the press conferences and in the way he answers questions? And take us inside, I guess, the press box this year a little bit.
I think there's no question that Kirk has been a little more comfortable around the media this year. He's got a great personality. He always has. I mean, there's a sense of humor in there that comes out on occasion. It's been a little more frequent this year. It's easier to be a little more at ease when you're 3-0, than it is, when you're sitting at 1-2 or 2-1 or something like that, and staring a pretty tough opponent down the barrel. But you know, I think that what we're seeing is a guy who's kind of comfortable with where he's at. I think that, in having a chance to sit down with him in August, which was something different as well for all of us this past month, it was an opportunity to kind of chat and kind of get a feel for where he was at and what he was thinking about his team heading into the season. And you know, the one thing I walked away from that day was just the fact that, you know, he's like everyone else. So, you know, he was a little frustrated last year, and I think that led to some changes, and some of that involves just being a little more personable, for lack of a better term, whether it be in the way he addresses us on a weekly basis or just the way that he handles himself publicly.
Which of the reporters, I know he says he doesn't have a doghouse for players, but which of the reporters does he just piss him off? I mean, which one, when he asks a question, does Kirk just ignore when he's jumping up and down with his hands or anything? Is there anybody that's in his doghouse from a media perspective? Somebody maybe that burned him last year?
Yeah, you know what? We haven't seen much of that yet. Coach Fry would always have someone to throw in the doghouse, but usually he had an ulterior motive. He was always trying to find a way to motivate his team. And it became a situation where late in his career, everybody knew it was coming, and you could almost pinpoint the week it was going to come. It was always against somebody who wasn't very good, and he needed a reason to kind of, jumpstart things. It was easy for Coach Fry to sit down and pick on a reporter, and it kind of rotated around, I think. But Kirk doesn't work that way. He tends to be fairly upfront, and if he doesn't want to tell you, if he doesn't give you an answer on something, he's not going to tell you something that he doesn't want you to know. But he'll generally be fairly straightforward with folks.
Yeah, that was a very diplomatic answer, Steve, because I know that a real
Thank
answer
you much.
Is Scott
that's something else
because
I've learned
of the column
very
he wrote in. I know the answer is Doxy because he still has that column framed, I think, the one that made fun of his assistant coach choices. But I need to now, Steve, you're a Cubs fan, right?
I am, yeah.
So get this, Kurt Allmeyer and I have tickets to the second playoff game. I won the lottery chance to actually buy tickets, so we got a semi-obstructed view, but we're in the building, so
there's going to be a second playoff for sure.
Well, they have to beat Pittsburgh first. And that's what I wanted to ask Steve is, are they going to get by Pittsburgh, and am I going to get to go see them in a playoff game in Wrigley?
Sure. Why not? Yeah. one game deal. I'm not a big fan of the one game situation for the wild cards. I think that it needs to be an elongated thing just to really crown a true wild card champ, I guess, for lack of a better word. But I think that they certainly will have an opportunity. It's been a great season, probably a little sooner than what a lot of us expected. They can go to Pittsburgh and win, and you'll get a chance to go to Wrigley and enjoy your somewhat obstructed view and sit in the house.
When you say obstructed, which building are you sitting on top of, Tori?
No, they have these pillars that are like right in the middle of the concourse that kind of
Many
get
of
a little
them.
bit in your way, but you know, you're in the building, right? And that's what matters. So, and you know, it's
Absolutely. In
hard.
Iowa, there's no need to see what's going on at the plate.
Exactly. It's hard for me to picture Jake Arrieta ever giving up another run, though, like ever. So I'm really stoked. I think
Well,
they get
I'm
through
sure
Pittsburgh and then it's good.
he will some point next year. He has to,
Next year.
mathematically.
Right. Well,
You kind
enough
of wait for
baseball
that stinker
talk.
to happen. Yeah, you kind of
Yeah.
wait for that stinker to happen from him, and it hasn't yet. So hopefully it won't until next year.
All right, well, now that we're out of baseball and football talk, we have to pivot back to the Wisconsin game and just put you on the record here. I know, that your journalistic integrity, prevents you from being a homer and calling for the home team, but we still need a prediction for a victory on Saturday, hopefully a
By one
victory
team or the other.
by one team or the other. Who do you think is going to win, and what do you think is going to be the score, and who do you think is going to be the standout player?
I think heading into this game, I think it's probably going to be a game similar to last year. It's awfully hard to pick against Wisconsin at home. They won 10 straight there. But there's just something that tells me that this Iowa team may have be in a position to pull it off. And I'll go with I'll tell you what, I'll go with the same score that I picked a couple weeks ago for the pick game. I had the margin right, the score wrong. I'll go 24-21 Iowa, and we'll use the foot of Marshall Kane again to make the difference and bring that bowl back home to Iowa. Wisconsin's won 9 straight trophy games dating to the last time the Hawkeyes played in Madison. So history can repeat itself this week.
So you're talking about like their axe game against Minnesota and the bowl against Iowa then?
And they also play for a trophy against Nebraska too. So
They
yeah,
do?
they've
Well, then
won
they're
nine.
due.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they've won 9 straight. So
They need to be brought down to earth, and we're just the people to do it.
there you go. You got it.
Well, that is awesome. I appreciate that pick, Steve. And you know, I think if it comes down to a battle of kickers, I gotta like our guy against their. Have you seen the Wisconsin kicker? He looks like he spends a lot of time at
Is
Chipotle,
it the
Poncheros, and
Brazilian
all the
guy?
other great eating establishments that Madison's famous for.
Is that a Brazilian
Yeah.
guy? Because I was joking, like they've got a Brazilian kickers, kind of like we had a Brazilian kickers on or Brazilian punters on scholarship last year.
Jim, that's a terrible joke.
It's a pun. It's not a joke. That's worse.
Well, Steve, we have to thank you for putting up with our childish antics and Jim's horrible jokes and my baseball talk. But thanks again for agreeing to do our 12 Saturdays podcast. You know, you're a true homer, knowing that we're a couple of Quad Cities boys. So we appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime, guys. You take it easy, and we'll see you in Madison.
Yeah, I'll be there actually. I'm taking my son his first trip to Camp Randall, so guess it's gonna have to be his first six pack of Miller Lite too. So rock
Well,
on.
he's 12 now, so
When in
he is of
Wisconsin.
age. He is of age in Wisconsin. Camp Randall, by the way, home of one of my favorite halftime shows of all time. John Morton was coaching the Badgers. So it was a memorable era there, and it was a salute to the circus where they brought some circus animals in from Baraboo, and the elephant left a little editorial comment in front of the Wisconsin bench at halftime, which was very appropriate at the time. So.
Yeah, I actually was a soda vendor in Camp Randall growing up then. That would have been like early to mid 80s, I think. I actually think I remember that. Were you? I don't think it was an Iowa game, but did you ever see the
It
game
was an
where?
Illinois game. It was an
Yeah.
Illinois game. Yes.
Did you ever see the game where they bounced a pass off of that really hard AstroTurf they had, and then everybody acted like it was incomplete, but because it was behind the line of scrimmage, they were able to throw for a touchdown. That to this day remains the best football play I've seen in person.
There you go. See? Memories. Your son will be creating his own this weekend.
Yeah, I'm hoping Ferentz pulls out the bounce pass, touchdown passes, as ultimate trick play to reverse the karma that Bielema put on us with that stupid fake punt, because that will live in ignominy.
Well, isn't Crist 0-1 against Ferentz, so we've got that mojo going.
Yeah, we own that guy.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Steve, and enjoy the game, and I'll take your prediction. We'll take that to the bank.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, bet the farm on it.
All right. Well, always good to have Steve here. Of course, the local guy, from the Times. I like his prediction against Wisconsin. You're going to be up there, you said.
Yeah, I try to make this game whenever I can, being a Madisonian native myself. Well, sort of native.
Madisonite? Or what's the word for Wisconsin? Madison,
most people say
Wisconsinite? Drunk?
People say Madisonian, drunk, and people from Wisconsin are Wisconsinites.
Chronic alcoholic?
Well, then, I think that's just a redundant. That's what Wisconsinite means in Algonquin.
Yeah, that's.
And I don't know why they're speaking Algonquin, because that's an Eastern tribe, not a Midwestern one.
It's Ojibwa for engorged liver.
Something like that, I think. But yeah, no, it'll be Spencer's first trip up to Camp Randall, and we're pretty excited about it, and we're mostly excited that you're not going, not because we don't like you, but you have still
yet
to see Iowa
streak.
Win outside of Kinnick Stadium.
Well, yeah, I have that weird streak where every away game or bowl game I go to, they lose. So I'm doing you a huge favor.
You're doing Hawkeye Nation a huge favor.
Taking one for the whole team and all the teams. But
now, why do you think they do so bad when you're there? Just your general negative energy, or just they want to piss you off because you're a jackass? Or I mean, why?
I'm a man of science, so I think it's voodoo. I mean,
I've got Siri talking to me. Sorry.
Obviously, it's voodoo.
What's going on? Yeah. But yeah, so we appreciate, and Madison, of course, is probably the best Big Ten road trip outside of Iowa City. And some might even argue that it's right up there as good or better. So, really, you are taking one for the team this time, Jim.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for good things. And, we were going to do Illinois. We're looking for that slam dunk victory so I can break my away game cherry.
We would have won that if we'd have gone. Why did we not go? I think the weather got bad.
Yeah,
something.
It was bad. And then
we couldn't get a hotel.
Dad's
that was
weekend,
it.
Parents' weekend for like 8 different sports, and so there wasn't a hotel between Peoria and Champaign. And
yeah, we'd have had to stay in Bloomington. And I mean, it's bad enough to be in Shampoo Banana, but
you got to go to Bloomington, normal, which is
absolutely. So, what do you think about the Badgers? Have you got a chance to watch them at all this year?
I did. I watched them. I think the first week. And then I watched them a little bit, was it last week against Hawaii, because they were the late game. So,
Hawaii? How do you actually pronounce it?
I think it's a
Hawaii.
V. Hawaii. Hawaii. It's a
Hawaii.
V. Yeah, it's a V. Yeah.
They're not good at football either, though.
They used to be. Remember when they used to have that guy that threw for like 5,000 yards a game?
Yes.
And they had like a whole string of...
Chang. His name was Chang. Why do I remember that?
Tom Chang? Ted Chang?
I don't think it was Ted, but it was Chang.
Yeah, and then he had a whole bunch of, Samoan, linemen to protect him. So, yeah, they used to be pretty good. They're not good anymore. But, yeah, I was struck by the fact that, just hanging around, running around the islands this summer, that they were playing football. I mean, they weren't playing soccer. They weren't playing basketball. They weren't playing baseball. They are really bought into football at all levels out there, and it was really fun to watch. But it has not translated into any kind of prowess on the field.
And that also did not answer my question at all either.
No, so Wisconsin, compared to last year, no Melvin Gordon, better Stave, never thought I'd say that, solid defense. I don't know. I feel like that we've got them in edge to Iowa in the run game, edge to Iowa in the kicking game, and a push everywhere else?
Yeah, I don't know. See, here is where I have a bit of a conundrum. When you think about Wisconsin, you usually think of a powerful, grinding running game that scares you, and a okay defense,
Jake
but one
Ruddock-level quarterback.
Right, but I feel like they're kind of like an opposite land this year. They've shut out two teams. And, I mean, look at Iowa gave up 16 points to North Texas. It's even if you're playing a poor team, giving up 0 points is very difficult. Yes. So, you know, Iowa's offense has looked much better this year, but I still don't think, I mean, it's not the second coming of, you know, Oregon or Texas Tech offense, you know, let's be honest. So, and then Wisconsin's not running the ball particularly well, and their best running back is out, and even he wasn't as good as Melvin Gordon. But Stave actually looks like a much better quarterback than he did last year. I mean, first he had the yips problem, and then even after that, he didn't quite have it. But and I've watched parts of all of their games, and he has looked more than solid. So, I am kind of worried that, you know, we're going to be able to gear up and stop their run. But then the things that we normally can do against Wisconsin might prove to be harder this time than usual. So just kind of a weird feeling with this one.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. It's hard to read. They don't fit the typical mold of a Wisconsin team that we're used to seeing. But, you know, I'm kind of encouraged. I mean, we've got to be the toughest that they've seen in a couple of different phases. You know, even, I mean, I would say Alabama's probably, you know, stronger across the board, but
I think our quarterback is better than Alabama.
I think it is, too. I think we've got a better quarterback. I think we've got better special teams. Maybe slightly not as good defense. But generally speaking...
I would say our defense is nowhere near as good as Alabama's. They're quite amazing.
Well, let's be blunt then. So okay. So prediction, and I think I went first last time. Prediction and standout player, go.
Well, you know how I feel about screwing with a streak. You can't F with a streak, to quote Bull Durham, right?
You didn't pick the score, though, last week.
Undersold Iowa. I really did. I honestly thought, you know, with the McCartney factor and the hangover factor, that Iowa was going to just score in the 30s and kind of coast in from there. So
well,
I wasn't expecting
the
bloodthirsty Kirk Ferentz there.
You can't count the pick sixes, though, right? So...
I guess without the pick sixes, I was kind of close. Kinda closer. So we'll go with that. That sounds good. But so, like I said, you can't F with a streak. So, you know, I think this is going to be a real slobber knocker defensively. Here's the difference is at the quarterback position. And right now, my eyes are telling me that C.J. Beathard is the best quarterback in the West Division of the Big Ten. And even though Stave has improved, and I think he's going to scare us a bit by being, you know, making some plays that we didn't really think he could make, I think Iowa shuts down the Badger run game for the most part, and Iowa does just enough to put Kane in position to kick a game-winning field goal. I think it's even less scoring than Steve did. I'm going 20-17 Hawkeyes.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I think we're thinking along the same lines. I think, you know, it's going to be, you know, they shut down our run, we shut down their run, and it just becomes a quarterback duel. And I like our chances. I like our receivers, and I like our quarterback, and I like our pass protection. I mean, if I have any complaints about our offensive line, it's about the running lanes, right? I mean, the pass protection has been airtight. And even when it breaks down, well, CJ can scoot for another 15, 20 yards. So I'm optimistic as well. I think we've got a better kicker. We don't have a Brazilian kicker, but we only need one.
Stop that. It's a terrible joke.
Yeah, it's a good joke.
It's a terrible pun.
It's a good joke. So I'm going to go with a little bit higher score because I think that when you pass, you have more opportunities to eat up yards a little bit faster versus 3 yards in a cloud of dust, which I just don't think is going to be working for either team. I'm going to go with a tight game, 31-28, Iowa. Don't want to pick against the Hawkeyes. I'm really hoping that we learn a lot more about this team and it's for the better. And I think the player of the game is Beathard. I think he makes a mistake early, maybe a pick six, maybe a fumble, maybe he tries to run with something, make something happen, and it just, you know, screws the pooch. But I think he's the hero by the end and redeems himself there at the end. So that's my thinking. I certainly would rather have him than Stabby, objectively.
So this is a conundrum for you, though, Jim. Now I'm going to have to put you on the spot. So you're picking Iowa to win, which puts their record at 5-0, but you only revised your expected record up to 8-4, which would mean they would have to go 3-4 for the next 7 games
So who are those four losses
against? Ooh, yeah, no, it's a good one. I have to go back and take a look. I would say, you know, Nebraska, Minnesota, Northwestern, and yeah, I don't know. I think between...
And Indiana?
No, that's probably the best shot, though, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I still don't know what we know about Illinois, I would say.
I'm telling you, this is why I honestly, and I wanted to put you on the spot because it amuses me. But more seriously, the real reason I wanted to ask that question is that I'm starting to think, you know, if Iowa wins this game against Wisconsin, it's hard to not think they'll win at least 10 games, isn't it?
I would say it's hard to argue against 8 or 9. I think
8 or 9, Jim. 8 is 3-4 the rest of the way. There's no frickin' way.
If they're good enough
to go 5-0 and beat Wisconsin, they're not going to turn around. Do you think they're going to?
Then I would say they would go 9. Then that would the new floor then becomes 9.
Floor, right? I'm telling you, I think if they win this game, they're a 10-win team. Well, okay. I really do.
Okay, and I have been saying for a while that if they win this game and they come out undefeated and they win this game, then yes. Corner turned, and you know I tend to be more on the pessimist side of the spectrum.
Sure,
or maybe just more of the I'll believe it when I see it type.
Sure, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you need to be proven. The question that I or the one point I wanted to make though is that I really hope Iowa fans don't freak out if Iowa loses a tough close game here, because I think, you know, it'll be a disappointment for sure, but there's still a ton to play for, and I think there's still a lot of signs that this program and team are at least are headed back in the right direction.
Well, now that's the optimist talking. I mean,
no, I don't think that's an optimist. I think that's being a realist. Yeah. I mean,
but you know, we don't know though. We don't know how this team responds from a loss because they haven't done it yet.
We don't
think that they are a resilient squad. They've seemed to be, certainly seem to be the type of team that is never totally out of a game.
I'm just saying that it will not be panic button pushing time.
No. But on the other hand, I also say that, you know, there were times in 2014 where we felt optimistic after Northwestern.
Oh, yeah.
You know, okay, finally, we got all this stuff figured out, and it we didn't have it figured out. And then there were times even in 2012, if you recall, when we beat Michigan State, we're like, okay, maybe from here it's all upside, you know, do well in the Big Ten. And 2012 was, of course, a 4-8 year. So,
right. So speaking though, of Michigan State, I wanted to throw this out there, even though it's not that germane. It's somewhat germane. But you saw the column this week. I kind of went back to that fateful game in 2010. That kind of, in many people's minds, kind of put Iowa on this kind of darkest timeline, if you will, right?
That is one of my low points, that fake
So time. I was going back, and for once, I was actually, you know, researching to make sure I was, like, you know, like, accurate. And so
That's weird. I was
looking back at the 2010 season, and you know what was so weird is, do you know that the week after that heartbreaking loss to Wisconsin, we freaking curb stomped the number 5 team in the nation in Michigan State.
Yeah, it was the Tyler Sash lateraling to Micah Hyde, and that was just rolled up. That was what D'Antonio called his snowball game, and you know. Yeah.
So what kind of weird dead cat bounce was that? When I'm thinking about that now, I'm looking, and then we lost all of our games that year by a total of like 11 points. It was a 3-point, a 3-point, a 4-point, and a 1-point, it was crazy.
But it got weirder and weirder. Like, if I remember correctly, we lost that heartbreaker to Wisconsin, which should have gone to overtime except for a blocked, J.J. Watt blocked an extra point. Otherwise, we would have been in overtime, but they won by 1 point. Okay, so that was a heartbreaker. We curb-stomped Spartans, and they've never looked back on us since.
Yeah. I mean, what a weird game that is in retrospect, that Iowa, you know,
we've never been able
to bounce back from losing a heartbreaker but to a ranked team, but then beat an even higher ranked team the next game, and you're still thinking Big Ten championship, but we've been in their rear view
ever since. Michigan
I know.
State.
It's bizarre, isn't
then
it?
They come with Ohio State and we lose on that just ridiculous fourth and 11 scramble, which was just maddening. And that was the thing that was kind of pissed me off about North Texas. They were converting a lot of third and 15s and stuff like that. But anyway, side tangent. And then, but then it got worse, right? You remember it was the Dan Persa Achilles miracle play that, you know, beat them in Northwestern. Yeah. And then it was like, yeah, they fired Glenn Mason and we're playing some interim coach and he's calling for onside kicks and the first fucking quarter and the only guy that's scoring is DJ K and you lose to Minnesota. And that's why to me, the 2010 season is, and I know we go on and on about this, the 2010 season is just this low watermark because it had so much promise. That roster was loaded with NFL talent coming off an Orange Bowl win, you know, ranked in the top 10. It's all right there in front of you. And that team just peed down their legs.
Yeah. Well, and I actually feel talent wise that if that team had lived in the playoff era, that was a legitimate playoff contender.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, legitimate from their talent standpoint. And yeah, just to lose that out. So, you know,
well, and as an Iowa fan, you know, you can't live in that spotlight every year or even maybe twice a decade. So the stars, when the stars align, you have got to make it count. And so that was the biggest tragedy. And so to your point, and the reason why I loved your column this week was because you were like bookending it. You're saying, look, you want to prove that you're back. You want to prove that you've turned a corner. Don't go up to Madison. It's right there in front of you.
It's there to take. It's there, and the karmic stars are aligned for it.
Yeah, just write your narrative right now. If you want to turn a corner and open a new chapter, you know, this is the moment.
Well, and you know, and I am not at all comparing the level of talent between these two players. But one thing that made me feel good today, I was listening to an NFL analyst talking about the Green Bay Packers and, you know, everybody giving credit for how great they've drafted and done that. But then they basically point out that, you know, Aaron Rodgers makes that team look as good as they are because he's got that talent. So it doesn't matter if Jordy Nelson or who goes out, they bring in some guy you've never heard of and then he does great, or they bring in some running back that's off the scrap heap and then they're great. But it's because of having that difference maker at quarterback. And I get the feeling that Iowa might have that guy on the collegiate level in CJ, especially for what he's doing as a junior. And I hate almost to put that kind of pressure on him, I guess, but you know, he looks the part, like he can handle it. And that has to get you excited.
He's going to break our hearts, right? He's going to do something here because just youth and inexperience, he's going to break our hearts. But he is, you know, he is 4-0, 5-0 as a starter. And he has shown that Stanzi-esque ability to just kind of shake it off. You know, when he gets put down on his back, he gets up and he gets pissed off and he does something about it.
He's the kind of guy you want to go to war with, I think. And God bless him. Jake Ruddock just didn't have that aspect of his personality. I think I saw somebody today describe him as a technician at the quarterback position. And I think that's great. That's absolutely what he is. And you know what? That might be exactly what Michigan needs right now. But Iowa needs a CJ Beathard.
Yeah. And we need that kind of every year. But you know, we'll see. And if nothing else, it gives them one more gray hair to scheme against. You know, whether they have to put a spy on him or whether they have to just kind of just, you never 100% know what he's going to do next. And he's that kind of that wild card that could come up and bite you as an opposing team. And so maybe they just play a little tighter than they would otherwise. And that just opens things up for everybody else, makes everybody else look better. And I think that's what you were getting at. So
yeah, well, and more importantly than anything, football at Iowa football is fun to watch again and fun to think about. And boy, for a lot of the last couple seasons, it just wasn't really that fun to think about or to even watch, was it?
No, it was painful, and like you said, it was like going up to the games felt like a burden. You know, I mean, we still went. We're not. Nobody could ever accuse us of being fair weathered.
Well, you know, beer and chicken wings are going to be good regardless of whether the football's good or bad. So I can always find a silver lining. Come on.
Maybe our blood alcohol level was a little higher last year in order to tolerate what we were seeing, but we never skipped out. So, but that's, you know, that's life. That's football.
Yeah. Well, on that note, ooh, I got to do it this week. That's awesome. I never get. And then what's the next part? You always say it. So.
Iowa.
And go Hawks.
Mr. Green?
Yeah.
You need any help?
Mm-mm.
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Want my Coke? It's okay, you can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay. A Coke and a smile makes me feel good.
Makes me feel nice. Be around. That's the way it should be. I like to see.
Hey, kid.
The whole world is smiling with me. Coca-Cola has life. Have a Coke and
drink. Thanks, Mean Joe.
Smile.